Our environment is so complex, and our wetlands are really a crucial element of our environment and of our ecosystem. They're very fragile, but here's some good news. You can help preserve them. So can I. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network, and we're lucky to have a great organization like the Wisconsin Wetlands Association working to educate us and to give let us know about the tools that we can use to protect and appreciate that will help us protect and appreciate our wildlife. Katie Belfus with us, who has been, boy, you've been with us a lot, many times.
And it's always fun, Larry. I so appreciate it.
Always great to have you with us. It's been, I was trying to think of how many years, but it's been a while. And it's always fun to talk with you about our wetlands and maybe just some of the basics, which we start with every single time you're with us, but I think it's important to establish that. What makes an area a wetland?
I agree with that opening question every single time, Larry, because there's still a lot of questions out there about what's a wetland and what's not a wetland. I once had somebody say to me, that can't be a wetland. I can drive my truck on it. Well, I bet you a whole lot of your listeners have driven their trucks on Wisconsin lakes in the winter, but that doesn't mean they're not lakes, right? So let's talk about what makes a wetland. A wetland has special soils that develop in conditions where there's water, and you can only find those kinds of soils where there have been wetlands or currently are wetlands. They have water at or near the surface for all or part of the year, and that's really important because there doesn't have to be water all of the time in wetlands, and they still are wetlands. And the third thing is the presence of specially adapted plants that grow in areas where their feet are wet a lot of the time, because many plants can't survive in those kinds of conditions. So if you see plants that are those kinds of special wetland plants, then chances are you have or might have had a wetland in the past.
Very, very cool. And they really have a positive effect on our environment.
Hugely important. When you look at sort of ounce for ounce, the benefits provided by natural systems to our earth and to us as people, wetlands really are at the top of the list. They clean our water. They recharge groundwater. They provide habitat for all kinds of species that we value, and maybe not all of the time, but maybe at critical life periods, like when they're having babies or reproducing or migrating. And they really are important for absorbing flood and storm waters and protecting our communities from that extra water. And one of the values I think that's under-recognized is their impact on entire river and stream systems. So when you've got in the spring, you've got heavy rains and snow melt, and when you've got areas that have healthy wetlands in those, especially at the top of those systems, they really slow the flow of that water so that it doesn't all go pouring directly into the rivers and cause erosion and lots of other problems, and then slowly release it over time. Really important.
And the threats, the major threats?
Historically, it was conversion for agriculture because we were very good at putting in pipes underground to drain. And you know, agriculture is important, no doubt there. But many wetlands were converted, and often farmers found that wetlands really weren't worth the effort. That was just so much work. There was, how many times am I going to get that tractor stuck? So that was a big loss there of many wetlands, although those kinds of wetlands can often be restored. And development, as our communities have grown and spread. Sometimes we settled in areas near water that often had wetlands, and we filled those in order to build our communities. We're doing less of that now, which is a good thing.
Katie Belfus, Outreach Programs Director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. Are you aware of the wetlands in your area? Do you know how to protect them? What concerns do you have or questions do you have about wetlands? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. You can post your questions or your comments there, and we'd certainly love to hear from you. We have, I guess, some news that I really think it's really cool. It just happened. Door Peninsula Wetlands.
Yeah,
they're deemed of international importance.
Yeah, yesterday a press release came out announcing that the Door Peninsula Coastal Wetlands have been recognized as wetlands of international importance by the Ramsar Convention on Wetlands, which is an international intergovernmental body that works to help nations around the globe protect and care for wetlands. They maintain a list of sites across the globe that satisfy a set of criteria and represent sort of the best of what we have on our landscape. United States only has 37 7 of these sites out of something like 2,200 globally. And this site that just has been designated up in Door County is the most recent addition to that. I'll say Wisconsin is blessed with not one, but two, but four wetlands of international importance. Horicon Marsh, your last guest from there, is one of those. The Upper Mississippi floodplain marshes, the Cacogan and Bad River sloughs up along Lake Superior, and now the Door Peninsula coastal wetlands.
And what does that mean?
It's just a really great recognition of the value of these wetlands, of the habitat they provide, of the services they provide, of the rarity and importance of the ecosystems that they represent. So in Door County, these wetlands are not only important in Wisconsin, they're some of the best and last of the whole Great Lakes ecosystem, and then thus the entire world, because there's no other place on the planet where you can have this mix of species and soils and bedrock, and there's all kinds of interesting things going on in Door County that make these really unique. So there are some very specific criteria that a site has to satisfy in order to get this designation, which this site did in spades.
Katie Belfus, our guest today from the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. Call in at 1-800-642-1234 with your questions. Pat in Richland up next. Pat, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hey, great show. We have a beaver colony about a mile away from where we live, and it sure looks like it has a positive impact on the wetlands there. And this might be a little out of your area, but the trout fishermen complain about beavers, and weren't the beavers here with the trout forever?
Great question, and I wish my boss were here to help answer that, because he loves beavers. And beavers are some of our oldest wetland engineers, nature's wetland engineers. And, you know, people and beavers come into conflict on the landscape because sometimes beavers put wetlands where we didn't want them. So I appreciate that they're not always folks' favorite, but they are wonderful wetland creators and have been historically. And you're right that there is a reputation among the trout fishermen that beavers are bad for trout habitat. Our experience and the science that we're pulling together, I mean, that we've seen, is that that's not true. There can be cases if it's a very shallow. The issue is the water temperature, right?
Yeah.
Where if you've got a nice cool stream and then suddenly it's backed up into a big shallow wetland, the water is going to warm up. But there's lots of cases where you can feel that the water, maybe the top surface of the pond, the wetland area, is warm, but the deep water is not at all. And I wish I had the resources here that I could quote you, but if you'd give a call to our office, we'd be happy to connect you with some of that information. That in most cases, the trout and beavers can get along just fine, and did for a long, long time. So.
There you go. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call as well. We have more callers online. Again, you can join us at 800-642-1234. One of the reasons to talk about wetlands now is that May is American Wetlands Month. And you guys, I'm sure, are marking the occasion in many ways.
Well, the joke around our office is that every month is Wetlands Month at the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. So we work for wetlands all the time. But we do take time during May to reach out and help share the message of wetlands with others, including through your program. We're so happy. And we do have a special American Wetlands Month campaign going on our Facebook page, where we're providing a lot of information about the benefits and joys of wetlands and a lot of great pictures and information. So if you're not friend of us there, join us and check in and see what you can learn about wetlands.
And that's at wisconsinwetlands.org, right?
That's our website, yep. And then we've got a Facebook page as well.
And we have a link to it, certainly, on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Bruce in Milwaukee, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. Yes, I'm interested in wetlands, how you get rid of invasive plants I've heard Lake Lulu, they are getting rid of certain cattails with herbicides, and I have a particular pond that had some it's not always wet, but anyway, it had a great frog population, and they decided to get rid of it's in a park, and they decided to get rid of the buckthorn that lives there, and they killed off my frogs, and they didn't even know that they existed.
No, that's too bad.
Well, invasives are a big problem for wetlands and for a lot of natural communities in Wisconsin, unfortunately. They're a big problem for lots of wetland owners. The three sort of biggies in wetlands in Wisconsin are Phragmites, reed canary grass, and invasive cattail. There is a native cattail in Wisconsin, but there is another species that has come up from the south and is now interbreeding with our native cattail. And, of course, their hybrid offspring are even more aggressive.
Or worse, yeah.
So in many places, the cattail are taking over. And the reason that's a problem is that it outcompetes then the other plants that would normally have grown there. And when you have a monoculture stand of any given plant, it's not as good habitat for wildlife. So there are folks that will control invasive species in order to maintain space for those other native plants and for that to provide habitat. There's mechanical methods and there are herbicides that can help in that. It's often it's often a pretty tough game to play, and be aware that the herbicides, any herbicide used over water has to be a special formulation because of the risks involved there. So we can't just go spraying willy-nilly.
And there are, and I'm not even sure of the names of the herbicides off the top of my head, but...
And it depends on the plant, and I don't want to get into that here because I'm not the expert there. But there, down in the Milwaukee area, Bruce, there's a group called SeaWisc, the Southeastern Wisconsin Invasive Species Consortium, and they do great work and have a ton of information on their website about invasive species, both wetland and upland, and how you can control those. And so that's a great resource for those of you in Southeast Wisconsin. There's many other similar groups in other parts of the state as well.
Yeah, and what's the acronym again?
SeaWisc. SEWISC, SEWISC.
SEWISC?
Yeah.
Okay. Katie Balfus, our guest today, I wanted to talk with you also. We were talking about pollinators earlier, mm-hmm. and there are some insects out there that'll do a pretty good job of getting rid of.
Yes, we can talk about that.
Of some of those invasive species, and we'll take that up. We're going to take a look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Net. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and whether it's a marsh, a bog, a swamp, we are surrounded by wetlands, and that's a good thing because they are a critical habitat for many creatures, and they serve very important functions for natural filters for our watersheds. And great to have you along today as we visit with Katie Balfus. Katie is the Outreach Programs Director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. Been a guest on the show many times, and May is American Wetlands Month, so it's great to have you back.
Thanks,
Katie.
Larry.
Appreciate it so much. If you have a question, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And callers online, so let's just take a call here. Dennis in Milwaukee up next. Dennis, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good afternoon, Larry and Katie. I call because we own a 40-acre plot in Door County. All of our land is in conservancy with the Door County Trust. On the north side of our property is arguably one of the largest wetlands in Door County. Part of the wetland is owned by us. Part of it is owned by the trust. And on the southeast corner of our wetland, we own the wetland entirely. So last year, the wetland, which is the one shared with the Door County Trust, had water the entire year. This year, there is no water. Yet on the other side of our property, which is also a wetland, it's been filled with water throughout the entire year. So given the fact that these wetlands are almost next to each other and are no doubt connected, why is one dry the entire year and the other, however, which is no more than 100 yards away, is filled with water?
Great questions, and there's lots of people who would love to be able to answer them. I will try, and the reason I make that joke is that Door County has some of the most complex groundwater systems that I've heard of because of the karst topography that underlies the bedrock that underlies Door County is very unique. And so water pops up in very strange ways. I was up in Door County last week and on a site where there was a little spring erupting at the top of a hill. And there was nothing else around that could have, you know, so there, that was, you know, water coming up from deeper. But Dennis, that's the answer to your question. Water in Door County, in groundwater especially, works in very mysterious ways. So I don't know why one site would be wet and one site would be dry, because you'd have to do some research into the groundwater flows, and that kind of work can be done, although it's tricky. I'm not surprised. Let's put it that way. To answer your question about whether your property is included in this Ramsar site designation, only land for which the landowner specifically agreed to have their site included is included. The primary landowners in the site out there that are signed on to this designation are the Department of Natural Resources, the Door County Land Trust, the Nature Conservancy, the UW Green Bay, and there's some land owned by the county. And there are two private individuals who own property in easement with the Door County Land Trust who wanted their property included. And so their private land is included in this with their permission. It's always possible to add property to these designations. And so if you own property that is in conservation easement with one of those property owners and are interested in having yours on added on at some later time, let them know. It's very exciting. The other important point is that the designation is in no way changes who has the authority and management and decision-making authority over those properties. So it's not a regulatory designation. It's a big seal of approval.
There we go. Thanks, Dennis. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Judy in Waukesha, it's your turn. Hi, Judy.
Hi. I have a question. I had kind of a run-in with the DNR. I have a 50-year-old pond. And about 4 years ago, I tried to just dig it out a little bit so I could get past the black, you know, soft muck, whatever it is, black dirt. And they put a stop hold on me completely because it was wetlands and the garden snake was endangered. But I heard that the garden snake is not endangered now. Is that true? I mean, could I try to just dig it out a little bit?
There is a snake in southeast Wisconsin for which there were special restrictions. I'm grimacing here because I can't even pull up the name of the snake, which I'm embarrassed about, and I don't honestly know the current status of those restrictions. Digging in wetlands is always a tricky issue. That black muck that you're trying to get rid of is actually some of the lovely wetland soils we were talking about earlier. The problem becomes where do you put that? And you don't want to put that on top of the wetland that's next to the open water area. And so, you know, the DNR is trying to do its job protecting rare species that often have very little habitat left. And so the little bit that they do have, they really want to hold on to. So it is sometimes hard when regulations get in the way of what we want to do on our property.
Yeah. See, she would, Judy would need to go back to the DNR, would she not, to get permit?
I think it was worth checking back and finding out what the rules are there. Yeah.
Yeah. It'd be worth looking, contact them again and say, is this all right now or not all right? So probably something you need to do. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call.
Larry, I'm embarrassed that I forgot one of the really important landowners in Door County whose property is included in this Ramsar designation, and that's the Ridges Sanctuary, which, if you have not been to, is
a phenomenal place.
And I'm particularly embarrassed because they're hosting the celebration on Memorial Day weekend as part of the Door County Festival of Nature that's going to celebrate this designation. And I'm the keynote speaker, so I can't forget the Ridges Sanctuary. If you're not signed up to come up to that Door County Festival of Nature, it's a wonderful event.
How do we sign up for it?
You can visit the Ridges Sanctuary website. They have all the information there, and there's tons of field trips. There's a banquet on Friday evening, lots of different fun things to engage in.
We've done some Wisconsin Public Radio field trips there, and always a lot of fun, and I learn something new every time.
Absolutely,
I go there.
Absolutely, me too, yeah.
It's really, really something.
And they have a new visitor center that's opening up this spring, so that's even better because it's going to provide so much richer educational experience and opportunities to engage people there.
Oh, that's wonderful. Katie Belfus, our guest today, Outreach Programs Director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. talking with her about our wetlands here in Wisconsin. You can join in, questions or comments. Maybe you own some wetlands and have questions about those lands. Maybe you just have a question in general. I hope you'll join us. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. If you want to visit public wetlands, I mean, we were just talking about the ridges, but where do you start?
Great question, Larry, and I'm really happy to say that Wisconsin Wetlands Association has produced a tool to help you with that. I mean, there's lots of ways that you can find wetlands in your own community, but if you're interested in seeing sort of high-quality wetlands that represent the diversity of wetlands that we have in Wisconsin, we put together a series of fact sheets and information on what we call Wisconsin's Wetland Gems. So these are 100 sites mm-hmm. that are located all over the state of Wisconsin that represent high-quality examples of the wetlands of our state. And so there's a lot of many of those properties are owned by the Department of Natural Resources, so they're public properties, or the Ridges Sanctuary certainly is one of those properties. There's a few number that aren't open to the public, but it's mostly very accessible, and we provide information on those fact sheets on how you can visit that property or where to go for more information.
Yeah, those are really fun.
Yeah, they're fun. Well, and the fact sheets provide information about what's special about those, what kind of natural communities, what kind of wetland communities are there, what kind of plants and animals live there, and why those communities are so rich and special.
And we were talking earlier a little bit about herbicides and so forth and use in wetlands. And I mentioned just before our news break that there are insects that can play a role. And we've had some success.
Yeah, when I first got into conservation, the big, scary invasive that was really on the rise was purple loosestrife because it was just taking over in so many areas. It has a beautiful purple flower, so a lot of people pick it and take it home and gather, spread the seeds. It's lovely. It's beautiful. And it takes over. But they have done a lot of research to develop, to identify an insect. There's actually more than one, but it's a little weevil that feeds exclusively on purple loosestrife. And so they've got programs now where they can release those beetles into wetlands that are infested by purple loosestrife. And the beetles just chew on the plant at particular phases of the life cycle and knock it back enough that the other vegetation can compete. I should say it's very important. We can't just go releasing things that we think are going to eat our invasive species willy-nilly. And there's a very rigorous process for identifying and testing these biocontrol agents before they're released so that we're not releasing more problems. Because Lord knows we have stories in our history where we have released something to take care of a problem and generated an entirely new problem. So
Yeah, absolutely. Roy and Appleton, your turn. Thank you for calling.
Yes, thank you. Two things. I just drove by something that really frosted me in a cold day like this, but a whole front yard full of Phragmites in their ditch. And I served two terms on a town board. My wife is an environmental specialist on native plants. How do we train town boards to understand that Phragmites are an invasive plant? They're not a decorative plant. Number two, if you're driving up Highway 141 north toward Oconto and you look to on the west shore of Green Bay, the Phragmites have invaded that whole area along the shoreline. That's one. And then number two is that I hear this said so many times, a developer will say, oh, we can develop this area. We can go over that wetland and we'll simply replace that wetland with another. Well, wetlands can't be replaced if you talk about those two things.
All right, Roy. Thanks very much. You raised a couple of very important issues.
Yeah. Thanks, Roy. Two good ones. I'll take the first one first. Educating local officials about invasive species. And it's a great question. As you know, town boards, county boards, they have a lot of different issues on their plate that they have to deal with. And sometimes they don't always think about all of them because there's so many to deal with. Our organization is working with particularly county-level government to help them recognize what wetlands are and why they're important and what they can do at their level to protect them, whether it be ordinances or what their process is when they're reviewing permit applications or whatnot. And certainly people like you, Roy, are so important in that process. You are in the ideal position to educate folks in your community about the problems of invasive species and the need to control those. Often people don't think about it. Phragmites might be seen by some as sort of a pretty plant. It's tall and it's got a fluffy seed head and looks sort of decorative, but it is a huge problem. As you point out, it's all over Green Bay and all of the coastal wetlands. Happily, there's a lot of good work going on right now to really try to tackle that at a broad scale. It's too hard to tackle on a case-by-case basis. You need a regional plan on that, and people are working furiously to try to figure that out. The second question that you raised, Roy, was about development and whether it's okay to fill one wetland for development in one place as long as you replace that with another wetland somewhere else. And this question comes up almost every single time I'm on the show, which I'm glad about because it sounds like a pretty good deal. You know, you'll lose one wetland, but if you're going to replace it with one of the same size or maybe even bigger, isn't that a good deal? And the challenge with that, as Roy alluded to, is that there's services that wetland might provide in that area where the development is proposed, that if you put a wetland somewhere else, that area is no longer going to have that service. You're going to put that service somewhere else. I'm talking about flood control. I'm talking about water cleaning. I'm talking about lots of those different services we talked about at the beginning of the program. So you're going to move that benefit from one physical place to another physical place, and that's going to cause problems. The second thing is Mother Nature has spent many, many thousands of years figuring out how to make wetlands that work. And we are working very hard to try to understand that so that we can restore wetlands that work. But we've only been working at it for a couple of dozen years. And so we're not as good as Mother Nature yet at restoring wetlands. It's important that we restore wetlands. Certainly mitigating for wetland loss is better than not mitigating for wetland loss. But I would say the most important thing is to protect wetlands where they are on the landscape and have mitigation as a last choice option.
There we go. Thanks again. That's a couple of great questions, and I appreciate it very much. We have Bob in Franklin with a question. Bob, hi. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. We have a property with a ridge in the front and a ridge in the back, and it's deep in between a valley with a creek running through that's usually dry. A previous owner had built a berm and a drain, so there's a pond in the middle of it. And, of course, the pond is filling up with silt. My wife was talking about digging the pond out, but I thought maybe, that berm and drain should be removed and let it go back to the way it used to be.
Yeah, comments on that?
Thanks, Bob. That's an interesting question. It sounds like, someone made a pond out of your stream, and now your constructed ponds do fill up. That's one of the things that happens. You will, in this kind of situation, because you're dealing with streams, need to talk to someone at the Department of Natural Resources early in your thinking to figure out what's doable, because depending on the age of the berm and the restoration that you might do of the creek, you're going to need to just follow some of the rules there. There are well-intentioned rules to try to make sure that water quality is preserved, which is an important goal. It's a good opportunity to bring up the fact that we have a handbook for wetland owners that's available.
Yes.
That helps lots of different wetland owners, including many of the people who've called today, learn more about and find out how they can find out even more information about caring for their wetland. And it's called My Healthy Wetland, and you can get it through our website, wisconsinwetlands.org. There's a page there that'll take you to an order form. So it's a good sort of basic guide to wetlands and how to care for them, as I said before. Every site is unique, so I hate to make prescriptions on what Bob should do or not do, but I think learning a little bit more about the history of the area would be a really great start.
And Bob, thank you very much for calling. I want to give Michael in Hartford a chance to join in as well. And Michael, it's your turn. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I'm calling because I think people need to know that their local land trusts are a great source of information. And in Washington County, we've got a land trust that's got a workshop coming up on June 6th for wetlands. I've got the Caring for Your Wetlands book. I love it. It's terrific. And our local land trust is also working on removing aquatic invasive species in the area. So I think people need to look at resources besides the state and look at their local resources as well.
Michael, I couldn't agree with you more, and I'm happy to say that we are collaborating with the Ozaukee Washington Land Trust for that June 6th workshop.
Excellent.
And also with the Door County Land Trust and other partners in Door County for a similar workshop on June 13th in Door County for people who own wetlands in those particular counties. And so you couldn't be more correct that you need to figure out your local resources. Often the county conservationist is very helpful. Certainly the DNR is not the only people who can help you with wetlands issues, and working locally can be a great opportunity. We're trying to work collaboratively with land trusts across the state to help provide them with the tools that they need in order to help wetland owners with their questions and concerns.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Michael. We had someone from northern Wisconsin wondering why property taxes are so high on wetlands when there's very little support needed from government for them.
And this is a question our organization has been working on for a long time. Part of the problem is that assessors around the state don't necessarily categorize wetlands in the same consistent way. So in some places, a wetland property might be labeled a wasteland. In some places, it might be labeled recreational land. In other places, it might be called something else. There's different categories. There's not a category that's wetland, because we didn't value wetlands when they first set up these property use categories, right? Wetlands were something that we worked actively to wipe off the landscape historically. So meet with your assessor, talk with them about the property and what you can and can't do with it to figure out if it's properly assessed. We have a tax guide that's available that we can provide to you that gives you some ideas and suggestions for how to walk through that process.
Okay, very good. Rod and Weyerhauser, your turn. Hi, Rod.
Yeah. Hello, Larry. Thank you. I was just going to comment about these mines with the sand, you know, because, you know, this sounds like Chicago up here. I thought maybe we were annexed to Chicago. But when they're done, if they've done any work with the DNR on reclamation of making wetlands to kind of benefit, get some benefit out of that when they are done, you know, if they're digging holes in these hills. I haven't went over there and looked, you know, but...
Just wondering, yeah, because we're getting running a little short of time.
Sure, yeah. Well, it's something that people who live in communities where frac sand mining is happening need to keep a close eye on. I'm not familiar with the sites in particular, so I don't want to comment on that, but people like you working locally to keep an eye on things and making some phone calls when things aren't happening the way you think is really important.
But if they're destroying wetlands, they have to.
Right. There needs to be a plan for what they're doing to restore or mitigate for those losses.
And just because of the time issues here, Phil in East Troy wondered, he has half his property on wetlands and wants to restore those wetlands.
Great. Well done, Phil. Welcome to the club. And I'm so glad. And the Wetlands Handbook that I referred to before, My Healthy Wetland, which you can get from Wisconsin Wetlands Association, is a good starting place. And it has a lot of tips at the back of other groups available in the state who can help you with wetland restoration questions and concerns, so that it's not something you need to do by yourself.
Okay. And so you can get some help.
Yep. Absolutely. Lots of different groups can help you.
And in our last minute, you guys have a lot of events going on during this month, and what's coming up?
Well, we've got field trips, a couple of different field trips coming up, and some public presentations even tonight. And as I said before, the Door County Festival of Nature is Memorial Day weekend. I'll be up there leading field trips and giving a presentation, so hope to see folks up there. Get out to a wetland. Get your feet wet.
Get your feet wet. And you know what? That's how you end most of our conversations. Go out there and get your feet wet.
It's one of the most important parts of my job.
Oh, and you've been doing it well for a long time now.
Yeah, 10 years.
10 years?
Yeah.
It seems like only yesterday.